It's the Security Weekly News. It's episode 290, and I'm Doug White. Welcome to the week of 16 April 2023. We've got Sisyphus and Elon, Action One, Cyber Insurance, CISA, Lockbit, AI, Jason Wood, and more on this edition of the Security Weekly News.
This is a Security Weekly production for security professionals by security professionals. Please visit securityweekly.com/subscribe to subscribe to all the shows on our network.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week. Your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News.
Did you know that Active Directory is exploited in 9 out of 10 cyber attacks? With access to Active Directory, attackers can gain control of your network. To keep attackers out, you need to find and fix Active Directory security gaps. Meet Purple Knight, a free security assessment tool that scans your environment for hundreds of vulnerabilities and helps you fix the problems. Ready to reduce your Active Directory attack surface? Download Purple Knight, the number one Active Directory security vulnerability assessment tool. Visit securityweekly.com/Semperis, S-E-M-P-E-R-I-S, for more information.
Application Security Weekly delivers interviews and news from the worlds of AppSec, DevOps, and all the other ways people find and fix software flaws. Join us as we explore how the latest news highlights modern security practices or reminds us of the missing ones. We also bring insights from interviews on topics from training to threat modeling, from open source tools to cloud native techniques, plus an occasional reference from New Wave to Synth Wave. Find us at securityweekly.com/subscribe or look for Application Security Weekly wherever you pick your podcasts.
Yeah, all right, I'm Doug White. Well, it's the day in the United States when we all have to pay our tax bill. Yay. I wish they'd just let me deduct whiskey and cigars. Then I might not owe any taxes, you know, but unfortunately they said I couldn't deduct that. But I think the world would be a better place if you could, regardless. Well, CISA, the United States Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, issued guidance about a high-severity Android vulnerability, which is believed to have been exploited by the Chinese app Pinduoduo. And I said it wrong. I got the tone wrong on the last one. Sorry. But Pinduoduo is a zero day, has a zero day in it, and they were using it to spy on users of the app. The vulnerability is an Android framework security flaw, which allows an attacker to escalate privileges without any user interaction, which is pretty frightening, considering you did install this app, or if you did install it. It has been patched, mind you. But as we all know from watching this show and doing this show, people don't patch stuff. Google said that the vulnerability may be under limited targeted exploitation back in March. On the 21st of March then, and we did that story, Google suspended Pinduoduo, and it's just fun to say, right? Pinduoduo. But it is an online merchant from Shanghai that pretty much sells just about everything. I was looking at it this morning, and a set of three milk ball black color contact lenses, size large, was only 23 yuan. So if you want to make your three eye, it was a pack of three. If you want to make your three eyes really creepy looking, I guess they got you covered. Or I don't know, I guess one is a spare, or maybe it's like share with a friend, you know, maybe do one eye at a time. I don't know. But anyway, like Amazon, they pretty much sell just about everything, and they're a big deal in China. I mean, 250 grams of qi li xiang, which is a dried fruit thing, is only 25.9 yuan. Like, The red bean barley tea was on sale for only 22.9 yuan, marked down from 199 yuan. I mean, what a deal, but I'm not really that big of a fan of the old red bean barley tea. I do want to know why they call the contact lenses milk bubble brand. Probably just a weird translation. But anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah. So Pinduoduo was suspended back in March from the Play Store after malware was actually found in off Play Store versions of it. So it wasn't in the main Play Store. It was in all these, like, you know, secondaries. Kaspersky said they also found versions of that app that exploited Android vulnerabilities for privilege escalation and installed additional modules to spy on users. Federal agencies have been warned to patch their Android devices by the 4th of May, as that current vulnerability has been added to the list of known exploited vulnerabilities at this point. It was added last week, which doesn't mean you can't patch today. Like, you might want to patch that today. Now, if you don't mind, I think I will order that big canister of chrysanthemum tea for 9.7 yuan, because I do like chrysanthemum tea. That is really good stuff. Although it's supposed to be medicinal, but I just drank it all the time for fun. Yeah, whatever. Lockbit ransomware gang has now created encryptors for macOS for the first time, apparently. Now, you remember all those smug Mac people that were always sitting around saying, you know, oh, there isn't any malware for Macs. And you're like, right, you keep telling yourself that. I mean, I didn't believe it even way back then. But I, granted, there was a lot less malware for Mac stuff than there was for, say, Linux or IBM Windows stuff. But if you have a Mac, please, you may want to seriously, you know, take this pretty seriously and start using better hygiene. Malware Hunter team found a zip archive on VirusTotal that contained most of Lockbit's encryptors. Now, in the past, Lockbit used encryptors mostly focused on Windows, Linux, and VMware ESXi. But in this new archive that they found, they had encryptors for macOS, ARM, FreeBSD, MIPS, and Spark, which was like, wow. That's kind of got the world covered. But there was also one named locker_apple_mi_64 that apparently is targeting Macs running on new Macs that are running on Apple Silicon. Older Macs use the PowerPC files that were also in there. So the belief is that these are encryptors that are under development. And Bleeping Computer said they talked to Lockbit Sub, the public-facing persona of Lockbit, who said that Mac encryptors are being actively developed. Now, they went on to say that Lockbit has a history of toying with security researchers. So, you know, maybe these are fake. Maybe they released them just to, you know, mess with people. But, I mean, who knows? If you're doing the old head-in-the-sand routine with your Mac or your Spark or whatever, and you're feeling smug, well, you might want to watch out because it may not go your way. And who wants to get ransomware, especially if you have a Mac? A warning was issued that bad actors are increasingly using Action 1 remote access software to establish persistence on compromised network. Action 1, if you've never heard of it, and I'll be honest, I had never heard of it, is a tool that supports patch management and deployment, and it pushes out software. So it does a lot of things that, you know, you can kind of do with Active Directory group policy objects, but you may not be using Active Directory and group policy objects, so you might need this tool. I know that when I used to support these labs, we had lots and lots of machines in there, and you had to have a way to push things out to them, you know, or you had to literally go sit down at 100 machines and install it. But this thing can actually keep up with all your hosts. It produces endpoint reports and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like LogMeIn, I guess, in a way. I mean, LogMeIn's not, I don't think as, LogMeIn's a little more like one-on-one kind of stuff, but it may have other features. But all of these are used to gain remote access to legitimate machines across your enterprise. A member of the volunteer and analyst group DFIR report saw Action 1 being used by multiple threat actors for recon and code execution with system privileges on various network hosts. Basically, the attackers install the Action 1 agent, which, you know, these agents, just like LogMeIn, once that agent's installed, somebody can remotely access your machine. I used to use it to manage my dad's computer. My dad didn't live anywhere near me, and you know, I had, when he would have problems, I had to use that. So I had a LogMeIn account just for that. But I mean, Action 1 agent gets installed, and basically what these people were doing was installing it, and then they were creating a policy that would automate execution of binaries so that they're going to use. So they would, you know, automate the execution of PowerShell or what have you, and that would allow them to run PowerShell scripts with, I guess, root privilege. Bleeping Computer said that Action 1 was apparently being used in ransomware attacks primarily. So much like the old LogMeIn style of attacks, this is another case where an agent can be used for good or evil, and in this case it's being used for, well, evil. Action 1 said they were working on new measures to stop the misuse of the platform and that they're fully open to cooperation with both victims and legal authorities on cases where Action 1 was used in an attack. But a lot like LogMeIn, which, you know, it wasn't really LogMeIn's fault that people were getting abused by it because a lot of it was installed via phishing attacks. So they send you, you know, that was LogMeIn was famous for they call you and say, you know, they need to put an update on your machine. Hi, my name is Bob. I'm from Microsoft and I need to install an update on your machine or you'll be banned from the internet forever. And people were like, oh, okay, what do I need to do? And then they would walk you through. I actually did this with one of them once just to see what they would do on a, I did it on a VM. But I also pretended to be really old, which was quite amusing. I was just mostly pretending to be my dad and going, which key is the any key? Any, I don't see one called the any key. How about, could I just press, oh, I think I've rebooted it again. Well, we're going to have to wait. Do you know my grandson? You know, and I was just really having fun with them. But the guy finally got mad and started swearing at me after about 20 minutes. And, you know, I was like, okay, enough's enough. All right. Several British police units were called out by the United Kingdom's data watchdog, the Information Commissioner's Office, or the ICO. They were using a calling app that was designed to record phone conversations on these officers' phones, and they recorded hundreds of thousands of phone conversations, and apparently the app not only recorded them, it illegally retained the data. This was so back in June of 2020, the Surrey police and the Sussex police, which are two areas of southern England, were given access to another call. We have tons of British friends, so I'm sure they'll straighten me out on Discord. But I think that's where that is. I could be wrong. But another call record, it's called another call recorder app, and it recorded all the incoming and outgoing conversations. Now, the staff made more than 200,000 records of phone chats, which were interactions by the police with victims, witnesses, and perpetrators of suspected crimes. And the recordings were all automatically saved by the app. Now, the ICO thinks that it is likely the app captured all kinds of personal information about the calls and associated that with the recording, and that some of the processing was unlawful and unfair. Now, again, all this is subject to British law, and I'm not up on my British law, so I don't know what the rules are about that in England. You know, in the United States, there are all kinds of laws about recording people and recording their information. Obviously, in England, the GDPR applies and all sorts of other rules are in place. Maybe Aaron may want to come on and talk about this at some point. But the app was first released in 2016 and was supposed to be used by a small subset of officers, but Sussex and Surrey made it available to the entire staff of their organizations. They have since stopped using it altogether and only preserved recordings that are required for evidence. The two departments said the app was used on 432 phones and 1,024 officers downloaded the app. They did say that at no point was there any risk or harm to any data subject identified. Yeah, okay. But they had removed access to the app, secured all the evidence, and referred the breach to the proper authorities back in March of 2020. Now, while they could have each been fined £1 million for each unit, the ICO elected to opt for trying to help them learn through their mistakes via a reprimand. So I guess the point here is that if you do start using apps that are, you know, recording, especially if you're law enforcement or something, wherever you are, you might want to review, you know, how these things work and exactly what's being stored and collected and make sure that you're not in violation, because I can certainly see cases where this could end up compromising cases and the conviction of people that was based on this evidence, at least in the United States, if you had this kind of situation. So if they can show that, you know, that recorded information ended up being the result, getting the warrant that got you to the person's house to find out that, you know, they were like the New Jersey cannibal or something, and then all that gets kicked out because of that initial violation of somebody's rights. So be careful. The cyber insurance industry is trying to get the government to provide a backstop. Okay, I admit it. I didn't really know what that was. I wasn't even exactly sure what a backstop was, even in just general context, but I think it's something for baseball. You know, it's that thing they put up behind home plate so that people don't get their teeth knocked out when somebody like tips the ball off or throws their bat or whatever. I could be wrong. But anyway, in the new National Cybersecurity Strategy document that came out in March, there is a statement that says, quote, the administration will assess the need for possible structures of federal insurance response to catastrophic cyber events that would support the existing cyber insurance market. And so it's like federal flood insurance, I think, is what this backstop term means in the insurance industry. So basically in the United States, you have to pay for homeowners insurance if you own a home. And that covers the loss of the property. So if the house gets burned down or something like that. But Then you get to page two of your insurance, and it has all the stuff they don't cover. You know, like floods, war, terrorists, mass shootings, acts of God. I think it actually does say that. And I'm like, how do you define what an act of, you know, some supreme being on the other plane is? Is like, couldn't you say everything is that or nothing? I don't know. But anyway, there's a lot of alarming exceptions to your policies. You know, but then, you know, when the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man and Bibendum get in a brawl on Fifth Avenue and the whole building gets destroyed, who are you going to call? Well, not your insurance provider, because they're going to, you know, they bailed the moment Ragnarok was declared. So who pays? Well, the government backstop insurance would be who pays. You did fill that form out, right? Because if you didn't fill that form out, the backstop may not apply. And you didn't lie about summoning demons and smoking cigars in the basement, right? Well, in this case, there's a lot of caps on cyber insurance. And the cyber insurance industry has gotten exceedingly worried that not only are their predictions going to be way out of line so that they can't set proper policies, but that maybe they can't predict what's going to happen at all. I mean, so what the lobbyists from the cyber insurance industry is proposing is that there would be a federal guarantee that the U.S. government would step in if the industry is confronted by a, quote, widespread devastating cyber event that could threaten the industry's ability to meet the claims and remain in business. So like, say, a zero day or a demon. I mean, it's insurance for your insurance, basically. The United Kingdom has a version of this called Pool Ray, which really, really, really sounds like a pop star, you know, like Pool Ray. But the UK put this up in 1993 after the IRA bombings of the Baltic Exchange. So membership in the Pool Ray guaranteed that coverage of any related losses, I presume, to IRA bombings, regardless of the scale or a rock and shove at the club, would be covered, you know, even if your insurance was not going to cover this, because I know that like some policies in the United States don't cover things like act of terrorism, act of war. And so, you know, if you had that and then you had huge losses, especially if you're losing a whole building or something like that. So basically the cyber insurance industry is concerned about unmanageable, what they call unmanageable systemic risk. And that's basically like something you couldn't have predicted, like a 100 meter tall rabid marshmallow man on Fifth Avenue, or maybe the Avengers. Remember the plot of Watchmen? I mean, think about how much damage a single Batman can do in a year. I mean, how do you predict that? I mean, you don't even know if there is a Batman, but then one shows up and you didn't know about it. And then boom, you got demons and Batman and Avengers and people from other dimensions, and it just gets crazy. So that's what a backstop is. Bibendum, on the other hand, is the name of the Michelin man, if you were wondering. But, well, as it happens, it seems like they may actually do this. So much like stuff like FEMA flood insurance, it's probably going to be necessary. I mean, if you're trying to assess risk without hundreds of years of data, how likely is it that some zero day is suddenly going to result in $100 million damages in the, say, marshmallow warehousing industry? So the basic concern is that without this backstop to allow caps on damage for the insurers may not simply, they may just not be able to offer policies that are actually affordable due to the amount of potential liability, which just comes back with an infinity sign when you type it into actuarial.com. It won't be cheap. But global cybercrime costs are expected to grow by 15% per year over the next 3 years, reaching about $10.5 trillion annually by 2025, which is up about $3 trillion with a T since 2015. So they may need this. Well, in the big book of hypocrisy, after calling for a moratorium on AI for 6 months and repeatedly slamming AI as dangerous, well, Elon Musk is now trying to release his own version of AI, which will be called TruthGPT. And apparently that's going to counter AI bias. Now, in my experience, when megalomaniac types and dictators talk about bias, it usually means someone made fun of the way they say the word hurricane. And you know who you are, and you'll be first up against the wall when the revolution comes. Sorry. Anyway, Elon says that TruthGPT will be, quote, the maximum truth-seeking AI that tries to understand the nature of the universe. Yeah, what could go wrong? All this from a guy who was trying to stall the competition while his product got to market by cautioning against the product he's about to release on the market. I mean, I personally find that anything with the word truth in the title is probably going to be a big fat lie. I mean, that's my experience. I know it's cynical. Musk continues to advocate for increased regulation of AI and said that AI is more dangerous than cars or rockets and has the potential to destroy humanity. I personally think the billionaire class is probably more dangerous than AI, but what do I know? Musk incorporated a new business called X.AI Corp in Nevada, and it says that the business was formed on the 9th of March. So who knows? I, for one, welcome our new AI overlords and billionaire leaders. Musk has stated publicly he wants to invent AI that is, quote, unlikely to annihilate human. But he also said you have to break some Greggs to make a Tomlet. Actually, I think that was Tom Wobbegans on Succession that said that. Who knows? Well, anyway, a grandmaster of Canton dog style of kung fu. His signature move is a combination eye-gouge, lip-ripping sweep that often leaves the target, well, gouged and de-lipped. His hands are registered as deadly weapons in Las Vegas, Nevada. Please welcome, cautiously, Jason Wood.
Don't make me come over there and rip your lips off again.
That's a real thing. I looked it up.
I'm sure it's possible. I just never really spent much time thinking about it, I guess. I don't know. Caught me off guard.
Can you pull my lip up over my forehead?
I think that's cool how Carol Burnett described labor, was grab your bottom lip and pull it over your head or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think you're right. I recall.
Going back a ways. So, yeah. I don't know if y'all saw the news Friday. TikTok's ongoing soap opera has entered a new phase in the legal world. We've gone from President Trump threatening the application of the company to President Biden continuing to put pressure on them. U.S. Congress is venting their spleen at their CEO in hearings. And there's even some bills out there, a bill out there that's aimed at it in some ways at the federal level. But now the legislature of the state of Montana has voted to outright ban TikTok from operation and download inside of the state's boundaries. Now, how well is this going to work out? Yeah, that's anybody's guess. In fact, I read a quote from the attorney general saying, yep, we expect to end up in court, and this is probably going to go to the Supreme Court and all kinds of stuff. So they're putting something on the books that is basically just going to cause a fight. But it's kind of an interesting new phase in the whole drama around this. Like I said, the bill is the latest, but not the only legislation out there that could impact TikTok. And it's certainly the most explicit to call them out and say, hey, you know, we're just flat out banning this. Now, the concern that they have is that ByteDance is based in China, and the Chinese government has laws on the books saying, hey, if we demand data, you give it to us. No protesting, just give us the data. And they're concerned about like real-time tracking of people and their locations and things like that through the application. So you have this potential for large-scale surveillance with, you know, millions of people using TikTok. And that does sound a bit concerning, though, you know, there's part of me that looks at it and says, well, I mean, in the U.S., we kind of do the same thing with warrants where, you know, a company gets presented with a warrant and they have to turn the data over, otherwise they face legal sanctions. Though legal challenges are a little bit more acceptable here to work their way through the system, whereas, you know, fight too much in China, we've got a record of people just kind of disappearing for a while. So that could be a little bit more of an issue. How gutsy do you feel with your challenges on this? Regardless, you know, you've got a lot of concern about in the U.S. and other governments about how TikTok can be used and its possibility for a means of mass surveillance as it catches us doing all kinds of stupid crap that we've recorded ourselves doing or our friends doing or whatnot, and then turning it into, I don't know, something nefarious that another government could use against us. The law itself is fairly short and easy to follow. It gives their justification for the law itself in the beginning, as most of them do, by citing their concerns about, again, real-time data sharing with the People's Republic of China, and that TikTok will not remove, and in fact will promote, videos encouraging people to do stupid stuff like, and this is from the law, smearing feces on toddlers, cooking chicken and NyQuil, licking doorknobs and toilet seats to place oneself at risk of coronavirus, swerving at high speed traffic. That was another one that they're out there. And, you know, yeah, those are literally all things that I lifted from the law that it cites as justification for this. Now, the law states that the operation, that it prohibits the operation of TikTok by the company or users, and the ability, or the ability, I guess, is that it uses an or, not an and, or the ability to download the mobile application from mobile app stores. Violations of the law face a $10,000 fine for each violation, and I guess aimed at the mobile app stores, another $10,000 per day after the violation continues on. So the law goes into effect January 1 of 2024, and if Apple and Google don't, you know, have it available in Montana, then the $10,000 counter just starts ticking and upping every 24 hours. There was actually a previous version of the law. You can see kind of the markup when you look online where they were going to have ISPs block access to TikTok, presumably to the application or even to the service entirely. Apparently, somebody from the ISPs convinced the lawmakers that this was going to be an absolute nightmare to enforce, since most ISPs really aren't set up to be to track, you know, what IP addresses and domain names and stuff like that that mobile applications or any application is using, and then filter content accordingly. So that got stricken from the law. They just really put the burden back up on the app stores. And certainly that sounds a little bit more enforceable because the two big players are Google and Apple. And I'm sure they're making some plans around this as they're watching the legal winds going and trying to figure out how they're going to comply with law in the country that they're based in. This is one of these things that I'm not really into here. The whole way you read this, like, they have that line in there about, you know, the operation by users. So as Doug and I were joking around about, you know, you got Farmer John out here, pulls over on his combine going somewhere and finds out that he's got TikTok on his phone, and so he gets slapped with a $10,000 fine. I mean, Montana's saying that they're not going after the users. That's not their goal. But they still have that line on the books that allows them to do it at some point. So, yeah, I'm not really... That strikes me as a little suspect. The bill has not been signed into law yet by the governor, but I haven't seen anything that indicates there's going to be any real pushback there. Now, TikTok and the ACLU are already planning legal action for infringing upon free speech. This is going to be kind of interesting because, again, this is not the only legislation out there. I did look at a bill that's written up in the U.S. Senate. I think Mark Warner is the sponsor of that bill, or wrote that. It lists out by country and says if an application is under control by this list of countries or has some kind of substantial influence over the company that makes the application, then allows them to then take action and ban that application. So it'll be interesting to see how all of this plays out, particularly since while Montana is the first, I don't think they're going to be the last to take this act. Now, I don't have any particular illusions around the idea that the People's Republic of China is not your friendly neighborhood government who's here to help. They've got a long history of doing things that most of us here in the U.S. and Europe and stuff like that consider rather oppressive. And, I said earlier, you know, we have legal challenges here and things don't work out, frequently work out in ways that I'm very uncomfortable with. But you don't just disappear, typically. I do remember one time sitting at a conference and listening to a Free Tibet activist talk about... when this was for the Summer Olympics taking place in China, they decided to protest the Olympic torch as it was passing through San Francisco. And while they did it, their mobile phones were ringing off the hook. And if they answered it, then they heard people screaming on the other side as they were being tortured and screaming in Chinese and stuff like that. And she said, you know, this was a bit traumatic experience here for her and all of the other folks doing the protesting against this. So, you know, you had experiences like that that make me very wary of the People's Republic of China. Would the PRC require information from TikTok on people of interest in the U.S.? Yeah, I think that's probably fairly safe to say. that that would be of interest to them. But I have some real issues with the idea of just turning around and just waving a band bat at everything we don't like. I read one statement from, I think it was a professor at Stanford, saying that they get really frustrated seeing the U.S. trying to combat China by acting like China, which, is a little bit of hyperbole, but it also has some element of truth in it, and we're just going to ban things we don't like, the Great Firewall of the U.S. of A, I guess. Enforcement's a little different. But regardless, TikTok's a really popular app. I just don't see this going really well. Anything that's really popular and people want to get, they go about trying to find their way to get at it. Kind of like alcohol during Prohibition. We saw how well the U.S. population responded to that. It was illegal, but everybody was, who wanted a drink was out there finding a way to get it anyhow. And that had all kinds of other side effects that nobody really liked. In fact, Montana isn't even sure how well they're going to be able to enforce this. So why put it on the books in the first place? Now, I don't use TikTok myself. I don't particularly trust it. But again, banning it, I don't think waving this around is a good idea. I think this is an area where it's like, hey, lawmakers, go do some homework. If you're really concerned about this, figure out a better way of addressing this, because I just don't think this is going to fly real well. So if you're want to go check this out, you can go take a look at the law online. They've got all the information around it there, and you can see what you think of it.
All right. Thanks, Jason. And certainly, lawmakers, if you are interested, most of us would be happy to, give you some insight if you are wanting that, because I've always thought we must ban things from tyrannical, oppressive government in the interest of freedom like you said, pretty hypocritical in my opinion. And I don't know how you enforce it. And I think it'll just get abused. And they'll just change the name of it to COTKIT. And then you've got to start all over again.
And then we're good at that point. It's fine.
Of course. And COTKIT is fine. It's, it's the same thing, only spell backwards. These things are just so ridiculous and overreaching and they don't do anything. So they bother me. Thanks, Jason. And finally, the leaked Discord documents showed that the Russian government has become quite adept at manipulating social media and search engine rankings. They had boasted they had boosted lies about the Ukrainian military and really a lot of anti-vaccine flames with lies about the side effects of vaccines and the effectiveness of the Ukrainian army and all this kind of stuff, according to these leaked Discord files that came out last week. Russian operators have boasted that they are they're very rarely detected by social networks, and that only about 1% of the time are they stopped with their fake accounts. Now, this comes at the same time that Elon Musk and some congressional Republicans are claiming that the federal government is colluding with tech companies to suppress right-wing independent views by claiming accounts are Russian. Yeah, I'm getting suspicious about Elon. But Twitter employees say that Musk cutbacks there have cut their ability to fight propaganda and hate speech. It's a really interesting article, if you're interested in such things, about how all this is developing, including information about a Russian campaign designed to spread the idea that U.S. officials were hiding vaccine side effects to cause, dissension in the West, which has been something the Russians, they've been doing this for a long time, and they're really, really good at it. I mean, it's always been kind of a Russian thing, all the way back into the Cold War in the early days, to spread Russian disinformation all over the place. What we need is better protection from disinformation and propaganda, but we don't need to censor everything and ban everything the minute we think it might be a problem, especially when it's something Elon said. It all sounds rather Sisyphean to me. And that's the news. Thanks, Jason, and I will see you on Friday.